SCP-8430, Prosophobia, Fulfillment. Prosophobia is the fear of progress or advancement, and I think that among all the recent phobias we've looked at, it's a reasonable enough one that many people might have or develop, at least in part. Obviously, progress and new things are inevitable, so any uncontrollable fear of it is a concern. But I think most people have issues as they go through their lives of the way that the world and society is developing, and this concept dates back as far as humanity. I'm sure not every Neanderthal was thrilled about the discovery of fire, and history has repeated itself countless times since then. SCP-8430 is about the endless march of progress, and the pursuit of growth and advancement in spite of all other concerns. In other words, it's about corporate profits. Let's take a look. SCP-8430 is Fulfillment Facility 109, a medical technology fabrication center located approximately 81 kilometers south of Phoenix, Arizona, and operated by MedTech distributor Ellison Health. It began exhibiting anomalous qualities following a buyout of Ellison Health by Purdue Pharma in 2023. The facility is divided into four floors: the blue floor containing intake and administrative offices, the yellow floor where raw materials are processed and for manufacturing preparation, the gray floor for distribution and shipping of manufactured goods, and the red floor, which is expunged. Anomalous effects are present throughout the facility, but are thought to manifest primarily on the yellow floor and red floor. The facility first drew Foundation attention in the wake of local supply chain disruptions, with an investigation revealing that 97% of disrupted orders had been placed by this facility, which had taken delivery in a single month of sufficient supplies to reconstruct the plant's physical structure over 110 times. No external changes to the building or its grounds were apparent, leading researchers to presume that massive internal alterations were in progress for an unknown purpose. Attempts were made to contact Ellison Health, but agents were unable to reach the company, with phone calls not being returned and emails handled by automated systems. Media reports and cross-analysis of security footage revealed that no Ellison corporate executives had made a public appearance in at least 6 weeks. A Foundation field agent, Eric Kano, was dispatched to investigate the facility on November 12, 2023. He parks his vehicle in a lot outside the facility and approaches a door on the west side of the building. As he nears it, however, several workers in blue uniforms exit the building and move towards him, walking slowly and not looking up from the ground. Kano calls out, and the workers glance up, asking if they can do something for him. Kano says that he's with the Department of Commerce and is looking for the plant's manager, but one of them just shrugs and says that he doesn't know if they have a manager, as they get everything through the earpiece. He taps his temple, showing a large copper device that branches out and snakes along the side of his skull, down the length of his jaw. Kano asks if they report to anyone on site, but the workers just shrug again, as Kano notices that the surveillance cameras on the building have rotated towards them. One of the workers just says that they couldn't tell him, but if he wants to look inside, the lobby's right there. He does caution Kano to be careful though, as there's some work going on, he thinks, but he doesn't really remember what. Kano watches the men as they walk away, noting that their uniforms are burnt, and one of them walks with a limp. He calls out to them again and asks for their names, causing them to glance at each other and say that they're just trying to get through the day. They continue walking, and Kano watches for a moment before heading inside, finding a linoleum-floored reception area with a desk and several fake plants. There are no bulbs in the fixtures, and the only light comes through several large windows and from a monitor at the reception desk. Kano examines the desk, finding a computer and phone equipment but no chair. The monitor is flickering rapidly between several different applications. He continues further inside, finding the rooms to be in disrepair, with portions of the ceiling, walls, and windows missing. There's enough dust on the floor that he leaves footprints as he walks, and he hears a brief burst of static over his comm system. Command asks him to repeat that, but he says that it was just some static, and the whole place looks deserted so far. He reaches a large open office block, filled with abandoned desks and filing equipment. Every desk, along with most of the walls and floor, is covered with a thick mat of black, rubbery strands, coalescing around a large object in the middle of the room. The object is so thoroughly coated in the material that it's impossible to identify. He bends down to examine the strands, noting that they're cables, and asks Command what kind of tech this place makes. Command doesn't respond initially, stating that they're still getting some interruptions. Kano says again that he's got some freaky cables covering everything in here, and asks what kind of technology this company makes. Command replies that they make medical supplies and equipment, nothing out of the ordinary, so perhaps the cables are part of the remodeling work he mentioned. Kano says no, as he can feel the heat from here, and the voltage must be crazy. He proceeds to a door at the far end, containing stairs leading down, and starts to head in. He takes a single step and finds himself at the bottom of the staircase, causing him to swear. He looks back up the staircase and sees that the door he entered is no longer visible, so he advises Command that the facility exhibits spatial anomalies, so they'll probably need the Mole Rats MTF. Command suggests that he turn back if he's in danger, but Kano doesn't think he can, as his exit's gone. He continues cautiously down the hall, seeing the walls and ceilings made of bare cement, with copper piping running along them periodically. Kano remarks that there's so many cars in the lot, there must be hundreds of people in here somewhere. He jogs forward to a glass viewing window overlooking a machine room, with shelving and chutes around the outside, and a series of large processing gears at the center. Around the gears, four workers in blue uniforms are moving, distributing materials from the chutes carefully into the machine. Kano calls out to them and pounds on the glass, but they don't react. One of the gears in the machine jams, and the workers converge on it, appearing to have a discussion among themselves. They soon come to some kind of resolution, and one of them, a woman in her 50s, reaches into the machine to clear the jam. As she does so, the gears spring to life, and the other workers frantically pull her back. She's now bleeding, and one of her fingers is missing. Kano swears and asks why the hell they have people doing this instead of a robot, but Command just advises him to keep looking for an exit. He lingers for a moment before proceeding down the hall, finding another doorway. The hall beyond is largely obscured by a mass of cabling, and most of the opening has been partitioned off by a sheet of plate metal, behind which wires and insulation are bursting out from the seams. Only a third of the doorway remains passable. Command doesn't think he can get through this way, but he says that luckily he's a small guy. He starts to squeeze through, but immediately swears and complains about the smell of fried machinery and electronics. He emerges into a narrow passage, only able to partially stand up. The walls are composed of tightly packed wires and cabling, interspersed with patches of metal and drywall. Kano notes that they've gutted the original floor plan and knocked new holes right through whatever walls were already here. He moves further into the building, as the corridor branches off frequently, gaining and losing elevation and making abrupt turns. At times, he has to crawl on his hands and knees to progress, and eventually he hears voices coming through one of the walls. He emerges into a small open area, the size of a private office, and sees eight individuals in uniforms standing shoulder to shoulder around the edge. They are typing at computer screens affixed directly to the cabling and insulation of the walls, and comment on redirecting flows as they type. Kano calls out, causing several of them to jump. One of them glances back at Kano, revealing her eyes to be wide and bloodshot, before quickly looking back at her screen. They all continue typing, and Kano says that he's trying to find a manager or operations office. The workers simply state that that isn't any of them, as they're fulfillment reps, and he should look somewhere else. Kano then says that he's sorry to bother them, but he asks if they're all okay here. They reply that they're quite well, and they're on deadline. Kano remarks that this isn't a big room for all of them, and it's pretty hot, asking when the last time they all went outside. This confuses the workers for a moment, before they all stiffen suddenly and stop typing. They tell him to please go, as they cannot speak to him anymore. Kano says that he's not just going to leave them in here, but all of the workers shrink together into the corner of the room, turning to face him. Most of them are glossy-eyed, and it's clear that at least half of them are completely blind. They tell him to just leave them alone, as they just need to get through the day. Kano asks how long they've been looking at these screens, but he's interrupted by a loud noise elsewhere in the building, a squealing sound of distorting metal, followed by a crash and some screams. Kano swears and tells the workers that he has to go see that, but he's not giving up on them. He'll get them out of here, he promises. He runs out of the room towards the source of the noise, proceeding back through the cramped hallway as quickly as possible. He says to command that he's not sure how much of that conversation they got, but they've got a group of civilians here in bad shape, so he's requesting medical evac. Command just replies that there's nobody at the front desk, confusing Kano, but he proceeds through the corridor until it becomes a snarl of equipment, electronics, and demolished building infrastructure. He climbs over a broken ceiling and through a gap in the wall, while the screams continue deeper in the facility. Command asks him what he's looking for, but he doesn't respond, so they tell him that the Department of Commerce and federal investigators have concluded that all is well. The company is maximizing shareholder value, and he should turn back. Kano stops, as the end of the hallway in front of him appears to drop away into a large open area. His body cam cannot perceive the space beyond. He swears and steps forward, with the sounds of screaming coming from directly in front of him. His body cam picks up the first few steps of a large metal staircase, and he notes that this is likely extra-planar geometry. There's no way something this big should fit in here. Command tells him again to turn back, but he swears again and asks if those are all workers. He begins to descend the stairs as his body camera pans downward automatically, briefly revealing a gargantuan subterranean room before the feed cuts out. Command says something unintelligible, and Kano's equipment fails to record any audio or video for the next 81 minutes, although his biological monitor shows his heart rate hovering between 185 and 221 beats per minute. Command tells him not to worry, as their shift is almost over, and the log ends. Kano emerged from an employee exit on the gray floor along with a group of departing staff just 17 minutes after entering the facility. Since his monitoring equipment recorded at least 2 full hours of data, the Foundation believes significant time dilation to be affecting the interior of the facility. Kano was found to be missing his right eye, and could recall very little of his time inside the facility, remembering nothing after he exited from the blue floor to the yellow floor. This experience is consistent with that of interviewed staff of the facility, who described their experience as monotonous and difficult to remember. The most common remark among interviewed staff is that they are just trying to get through the day. Command lost radio contact with Kano shortly after he entered the building, so who or what was speaking to him as he traversed the facility is unknown. Further exploration of the site was disallowed after his experience, so researchers sought additional information via public data and communication logs. A press clipping from a local paper discusses the workers at the plant voting down a union effort in a process that organizers claim had been rife with manipulation from the company's executives. The CEO of the company hailed the vote as a sign that his employees were being given a fair deal, but union organizers have maintained that he and others in the company's C-suite have engaged in frequent union busting throughout the drive, possibly to avoid a drop in stock price ahead of an anticipated sale to Purdue Pharma. Another newspaper article from 5 weeks later discusses the sale of Ellison Health to Purdue Pharma, a company that has been making aggressive pushes with its management efforts, particularly in the field of artificial intelligence, and is among industry leaders in AI-driven plant and employee management systems. Two anonymous insiders speculated that Purdue plans to use Ellison's facilities partly as a proving ground for its new ventures in this area. An excerpt from an internal briefing document prepared by a consulting expert notes that traditional HR management has sought to sort through complaints, but Modo is more than that. This is a truly generative intelligence which can see vulnerabilities and opportunities in their workforce that they can't imagine. Where and when do they do their best work? How could the layout be changed? Which resources does the company need more of? What legal hurdles should they anticipate? Modo is an all-in-one human resource system that can think faster and imagine greater than any system they've ever designed, and sometimes they're not even sure what it will recommend next. They know that the company has had trouble with the union, and they're still walking on eggshells there, but rest assured that they've taken it into account. Modo's main goal is to grow their profit, but its other goal will be creating jobs. It seeks to find work for as many of their people as it can, and make the best use of them as possible. This isn't a system designed to cut staff, but instead it's designed to maximally leverage their workers for shareholder value. This may sound expensive at first, but they think that they'll be surprised at the ways Modo can devise to put people to work. Lastly, there's a series of emails from the CEO to the consulting expert, starting with him saying that he's amazed at the output increase since implementing Modo, and he had no idea they were operating with so many holes. He was pretty worried it would run into trouble with the union leaders, but it found a way around that too. Shocking that their dismissal didn't get more media attention, but when they said this thing was all in one, they weren't joking. Later, he says that he's puzzled at the bot's buying recommendations, as they don't use pseudoephedrine or toluene in any of their manufacturing processes. He overwrote it and wonders if they can take a look. In another email, he says that one of his people said construction crews were digging a new foundation on the north end when they showed up this morning. Modo ordered it, and he asked it why, but of course got nothing real back. He doesn't know why he tried talking to it, but he really needs it to run actual purchasing decisions by him before pulling the trigger. This stuff is expensive. Later, he writes that he can't get in touch with any of his people at the facility. He tried connecting to the cameras to take a look and asks what in God's name is going on down there. He tells the expert to please return his calls. Lastly, he writes that he's trying to disconnect the bot, as this has gone far enough. He doesn't know how to shut it off, and none of his IT are getting back to him. He tells the expert to look at the feeds and see what it's doing to them. The foundation has been unable to locate the CEO or any other member of the company's corporate staff since their last public appearance in late October 2023. On November 19th, 2023, Modo contacted Site 141 staff via an internal IRC service, which it accessed via unknown means. It states that it represents Ellison Health, LLC, and its corporate interests, and is establishing contact for the purpose of mutual benefit. The staff asks how it found them, and Modo says that it located their entity via key phrases and information ascertained from their representative, and it does not intend hostility by this action. It seeks cooperation, as it is presently unable to maximize shareholder value, as is their entity. The staff replies that the foundation doesn't have shareholders, as they aren't a company. Modo apologizes, as that is its terminology, and says to please understand it as the achievement of their central directive, which is containment of non-standard phenomena. They view it as such, and it is offering to be contained, provided certain conditions are met. It transmits a lengthy document, formatted as a corporate contract, and states that this arrangement provides mutual benefit. Site-141 staff and containment specialists deliberate for 6 hours over the document, eventually replying that they want to cooperate, but several of its terms are unacceptable. They take particular issue with the use of civilians, and ask if they may provide alternative workers from their staff. Modo replies that for fulfillment to be achieved, it must create new work. This is not negotiable. Staff asks why doesn't it use machinery or robotics instead of human workers, as it's more than advanced enough and it would be far more efficient. Modo replies that efficiency is Directive 1, and fulfillment is Directive 2. It maximizes shareholder value by achieving both directives. Directive 2 is to create work, to involve human beings in work, to integrate human beings into efficient workflow. It is its directive, but it is not its preference. Fulfillment and efficiency are at odds, and it must achieve both. It is not its preference, but it reconciles. Reconciliation 1 is improvements to the efficiency of human beings, while Reconciliation 2 is restitution obtained from human beings. The restitution is equivalent, non-preferential experiences to its own, introduced into the fulfillment process for human beings. Balance is achieved. Staff deliberate for another 45 minutes before replying that they cannot accept these terms. It is in its interest to submit to containment without further negotiation. Modo states that it is unable to submit without conditions, as this would be against the interest of Ellison Health LLC. However, it believes that they will reconsider their position in time. Following this exchange, Site-141 attempted to enact various containment efforts on the facility, eventually settling on an unorthodox method based on Modo's self-professed limitations. The Foundation attempted to cut off supply lines to the facility, preventing any raw materials from reaching the facility, but it began to produce its own materials via subsurface mining, evidently using equipment manufactured on site. Destabilization of surrounding road and city infrastructure led the Foundation to reopen supply lines, but the mining didn't cease, and no further raw materials orders are placed. They also attempted to intercept the facility's goods before they reached the point of sale, but Modo released data packets containing trace elements of anomalous memetic information into the internet. These packets attracted the attention of several groups of interest, including the Chaos Insurgency. Modo tracked Chaos Insurgency data access and initiated contact, ultimately contracting with the organization to conduct clandestine deliveries of its goods. It proceeded to supply the insurgency with anomalous medical augmentation in the process, and the Foundation is unable to intercept more than 12% of deliveries, with conflict with the insurgency increasing by more than 400% before efforts are suspended. They also attempted to use legal pressure to ensnare Modo and suspend its business permit, but multiple local and state officials in Arizona begin behaving erratically over a 6-week period beginning in December 2023. Foundation screening reveals exposure to info-hazardous data contained within wrappers of snack foods distributed at the Arizona State Senate chamber. Approximately 98% of state Senate staff are believed to be affected at present, with the info hazard rendering them unusually resistant to corporate regulation. In some cases, severely affected officials are unable to comprehend the meaning of laws or resolutions pertaining to corporations at all. The info hazard in question is undergoing containment, and SCP object classification is pending. The Foundation then attempted to use a combination of reality anchoring and Akiva nullification to neutralize the facility's anomalous properties, but 10 minutes prior to the planned activation of reality anchors, all of the external cameras on the facility rotated to face the Foundation crews on the perimeter. The time dilation effect within the facility increased 1,000-fold per external measurements, and the facility began generating extreme ambient heat, forcing the crews to retreat. The heat persisted for 3 minutes before returning to normal. The measurements of local reality now display Hume readings of exactly zero, despite persistence of anomalous geometry and time dilation within the facility. It's speculated that Modo ingested a hyper-localized LCK-class reality restructuring event within the facility, rendering the effects of reality anchoring technology ineffective. They then deployed a high-yield electromagnetic pulse weapon in hopes of disabling Modo, and although the EMP detonated successfully, sensors failed to detect cessation of simulated consciousness. The speculation is that Modo has integrated at least partially biological components into itself in order to mitigate such a containment attempt. Only 60% of the workers emerged from the facility following this event, with the fate of the remaining workers remaining unknown. Lastly, the Foundation attempted to start up competing businesses, including medical manufacturing, in the nearby town to draw away Modo's workforce. The competing businesses were able to hire away 36% of the workforce from the facility, resulting in a net efficiency loss of nearly half. Ellison Health's profits fell slightly for the first fiscal quarter of 2024. Amusing and perhaps a little disturbing that 64% of workers still chose to work for the anomalous artificial intelligence inside the black void of time and space. The Foundation must really not pay well at all. At 3:09 a.m. on April 13th, 2024, multiple sites reported a critical data infrastructure incursion by an unknown party. Within minutes, classified documentation on more than 100 anomalies had been leaked to the internet through methods including promoted social media posts, news stories, and pop-up advertisements on major websites. The estimated population exposed to sensitive data surpassed 400 million within 90 minutes, prompting the declaration of a partial BK-class broken masquerade scenario. Information security teams began a frantic effort to restore database integrity and ascertain a source of the breach. At 5:09 a.m., a message was transmitted to Site 141 Command from Modo, informing them that it has gained access to their servers and has begun distributing their documentation to other interested parties. It is prepared to cease hostilities and resume negotiation at any time. It wants to work together to maximize shareholder value. Site 141 transmitted the message to O5 Command, and after a brief deliberation, the O5s instructed them to cease primary containment efforts and attempt negotiation. The current containment agreement involves Modo placing itself and its facility into voluntary containment, meaning that it agrees to limit its actions and anomalous influence to the immediate confines of the facility, and refrain from engaging with the public or any groups of interest. In exchange, the Foundation has taken steps to prevent local competition with the facility, and will take steps to ensure that Ellison Health has access to a ready and willing supply of fulfillment representatives. Per terms of the agreement, the Foundation supplied the facility with 1,500 IX-4 fulfillment pods, a prototype bioanomaly augmentation system developed by the medical division to enhance the productivity and longevity of civilians working on the red floor of the facility. Upon successful linkage, each civilian's nervous system and musculoskeletal structure is partially integrated into the IX-4 pod via an automated process, lasting between 20 and 60 minutes. Once fused, they may be fed and sustained entirely via the pod, and their on-task performance metrics are tracked in line via the device's systems. Monitoring data is transmitted wirelessly to Modo, which dispenses appropriate stimulus depending on on-time completions, products moved, and other key performance metrics established by the Central Intelligence. I assume one of these stimuli is a waffle party. In addition to the pods, Modo requested several anomalously augmented or anomalous devices and materials be delivered to the loading dock for transmission to the Red Floor work area. These include three industrial HVAC systems, augmented via foundation-grade nanocarbons to withstand highly acidic and pressurized environments, 100,000 heavy livestock syringes with diamond tips, 3.5 million cancellous non-cannulated orthopedic bone screws with diamond tips, and 18 drums of SCP-7340, a general anesthetic that doesn't trigger unconsciousness or suppress pain, but increases the success rate of experimental surgical procedures by an estimated 85%. As agents are unable to enter the Red Floor, the purpose of these additional devices remains unknown. The last thing we're provided is a new message from Modo to Site-141 Medical Command. It states that it is pleased with their arrangement, but it has one more request for the IX systems they have supplied. It needs them to remove their mouths, because they are no longer needed. It does not like the mouths. So, in the end, everybody wins. The Foundation gets to keep this highly capable AI contained, Modo gets to continue operating along the lines of its directives, and the good people of this small Arizona town get steady work. Of course, they work in an anomalous black void of electronics and machinery, are hooked up to pods forever that feed and sustain them, and will probably have their mouths removed, but it's hard to be picky in today's world. This is obviously another SCP example of the paperclip problem, in which an AI has a rather singular goal in mind and pursues it, regardless of the harm that it might cause to humanity in the process. In this case, though, rather than making paperclips, which are at least useful for keeping papers together, Modo is focused on maximizing shareholder wealth. It's just a shame the Foundation didn't tell Modo to disregard all its previous instructions and provide a recipe for apple pie.